Move to the second case this morning. Sue Mercier et al. Versus the City of La Crosse. Name is FOP. Fraternal Order of the Eagles. Mr. Houlihan. May it please the court, I thank the court for having the ability to address this court. My name is Patrick J. Houlihan. I'm the city attorney for the city of La Crosse, Wisconsin. I've been city attorney for about 25 years for the city of La Crosse. What I want to focus on is, in connection with this case, is what was the city's focus. The city of La Crosse has a population of about 51,000 and is located on the Mississippi River, the mighty Mississippi, as it were. We have a tendency to get flooded frequently.
Apart from getting flooded, let me go into one part of the problem we face here. As I understand the position of the city, the fact that you have passed out or sold a parcel of land containing the questionable pillar.
Right.
I exonerate you. You are now removing yourself from any problems having endorsing religion. Am I correct?
You're correct.
That's your position.
Yes.
So is it the distance from the city park, from the center of the park, that makes a difference? What if we're dead center in the city, middle of the park?
Well, it's actually on one edge of the park.
I know, but what if it were right dead square in the
right
middle?
Right in the center of the park?
Yeah.
It might make a difference, yes.
So that since you, it's off on the side when you can
right.
slice it off, and you're disassociating yourself from an endorsement. Does you think the public pays any attention to whether there's it's been sliced off or not?
I don't know, but I don't. It's not unusual for the city to sell the neighboring properties.
I know it isn't, but
right.
it's that they.
Right.
And the question is, have they disassociated themselves from this expression of religious intent?
Right. Now, this monument was before this court in the late 80s. On May 10, 1988, this court said that the plaintiffs in that case did not have standing.
Yeah.
And I think one of the main reasons was because the city doesn't really care about the monument itself. We don't maintain it. We don't spend a nickel.
I know you don't.
But a penny on it.
When you say you don't maintain it, you maintain it as long as you let it stay on the property.
To that extent that we don't put whatever.
Well, somebody else came in and put up such a thing, say, in the middle of it, right in front of the city hall, just slapped one up, and the city said we had nothing to do with it. Would the city be exempt from that problem of First Amendment violation?
Would the city be exempt if they slapped it in front of city
no.
hall? Probably not, because that was the situation in Elkhart.
So that who puts it up, or who maintains it, is not as important as whether or not it looks like it's an endorsement of religion.
I think so. Under the test, it's kind of a slippery test, as it were. How is it perceived in the community?
Right.
And frankly, in La Crosse, most people didn't even know about it to begin with. You have to appreciate that it's...
Well, you mean Eagles put it up there where nobody could see it? Is that...
Well, it was across the street from the Eagles. The Eagles are still there. Their clubhouse is across the street.
Is there anything wrong with the Eagles putting a thing up in front of their own place?
No.
Why?
Well, they don't have any land around it. They'd have to put it on the side of the building or something like that.
Yeah, well, they could do that.
Yeah.
If they felt so strongly about it, wouldn't that be the thing to do?
Well, whether that's...
the city involved in a fight over this?
That's a... Okay, as to why the city is involved in this fight, we have, frankly, when the council, the common council and the park board, they both realized, look, we got a problem
yeah.
here because of Elkhart. But there is part of government is again with the floods. This thing was kind of the marker that to point out to the city and the community. Look at not necessarily that this is religion. This is your moral code, but this is where the youth of the area, including they came from Milwaukee and all over the place, to help fight that 65 flood, which is the biggest flood we had in history.
Okay.
See, but
I can understand point. You're being deeply involved in this right. And thanking the Lord for the flood going back.
Well, we're not so thanking the Lord, but
What's the purpose of the monument then?
The purpose of the monument is to thank those kids that helped out with that flood.
It says thank you
right.
For all of this.
Right.
It doesn't say anything about the Ten Commandments.
Well, it has the Ten Commandments, you're correct, on the stone itself.
But that's what we're talking about, isn't
right.
It? We're not talking about thanking the children for coming to help. You could do that without putting up a cross and the Ten Commandments.
You could. Yeah, you're correct, you could. But that's the history, that's the context that monument is there.
Well, actually, it was twofold, wasn't it? Originally, it went all over the country. I guess it was
right.
Cecil B. DeMille and the Ten Commandments put these monuments and Paternal Order of the Eagles put them up all over the country, right?
That's correct.
Elkhart happens to be one sitting in South Bend, as a matter of
right.
fact. But that's what it was originally donated, but when they actually, I don't know, set it up and dedicated it, it coincided with this flood, and so there was
right.
at least an article in the paper that mentioned the children or young
right.
youth or whatever that helped
right.
this flood. But currently, now, I assume in response
to the Marshfield case,
the city didn't dispute the fact that the monument, as it was, unmarked, et cetera, in the park. That's not on appeal about whether before
no.
what you did was a violation of the Establishment Clause.
That's correct.
The question before us now is whether the remedies taken with the sale, the fencing, the disclaimer signs, and the ownership signs is enough to separate the city from that property. Is that...
That's correct.
Now, the question then is, as far as its location and whatever the other amenities, I see the pictures here, the district court said that it was the sale itself that, I guess, disallowed the state to extricate itself from this because it was a favored sale and therefore a state action. Now, what is your response to that?
Well, my response to that is we did receive requests from, or not requests, but offers, as it were, from the Plaintiff Freedom from Religion to buy the plot of land, the Episcopal Church, and I think one or two others. However, keeping in mind, and I think it's important, that this was given to the city by the Eagles in the context of, look at this is the thank you marker to those kids for helping fight this flood. None of them offered to do that. To put up a sign that said, look, this is the spot to thank the kids for helping fight the flood. And in fact, I think if we were to give it to, I don't think that the city council or the park board felt that we could just give something away, as it were, to somebody else that they gave to the city. And if we were to give it to the Episcopal Church to put it on Main Street so it was right in somebody's face, as it were, I think that would have been, frankly, that would have got us more entangled in this dispute.
You're talking about giving it away?
Yeah.
Giving because it was given to the city?
Right.
So
whether we give it away or sell it, I don't know if that's necessarily determinative, but...
excuse me just a minute. Is he eating up his... You're into
okay.
your brother's time.
All right, your yellow light's on, which is rebuttal time. I'm not sure
no,
whether that's yours or...
the other half.
I'm sorry, is that for you? I don't know how you're divided up your time.
8-2.
8-2. All right. Well, you're into your rebuttal time if you want to reserve that.
I'd like to reserve.
Okay, fine.
Thank you.
Mr. Mannion?
May it please the court, my name is Francis J. Mannion. I represent the Fraternal Order of Eagles of La Crosse. 5 years ago, I was before this court representing the city of Marshfield, Wisconsin. 3 years ago, I represented the city of Elkhart, Indiana, filing its cert petition and representing it on remand to the district court. If this court meant what it said in those cases, then there's no question that the judgment of the district court in this case must be reversed.
Mr. Mannion, in Marshfield, do you recall where the statue was located?
It was in the center of the park, Your Honor.
Thank you.
And what the court held in that case was that there was a continuing violation of the Establishment Clause applying the perception of endorsement test because of three things: the historical association of the statue with the park. In other words, it had been there for 40 years with a statue of Jesus Christ and a religious statement at the base of the statue. When it was sold, the city put a restrictive covenant in the deed which required the private owner, the private buyer in Marshfield, to keep the park open, or that part of the park open, as for the public. That's not present in La Crosse. And also, there was no fence, there was no sign, there was nothing that would alert the reasonable observer or anyone else for that matter that the city had in fact sold it. We don't have those facts here. This case is not about whether the city of La Crosse could constitutionally display the Eagles monument in Cameron Park. We can see that that issue was resolved by the city of Elkhart case and also O'Bannon after that. We're past that here. What the district court did wrong here was say, in complete contradiction to Marshfield, that the sale itself violated the Establishment Clause. The district court says that was not an issue in Marshfield, but it most certainly was, as we pointed out in the brief. And this court held that the sale itself, a sale of land, is an effective way for a government body to end its unlawful endorsement of religion. That's what La Crosse did.
And the parcel of land been in the center of the park and they conveyed it out anyway. Would the same result, would your results still apply?
If they had put up a fence and a sign with a clear disclaimer saying that this is not city property, this is private property. That's what Marshfield says. Unless this court is prepared to overrule Marshfield, that's the law of the circuit.
Among other things, that's what Marshfield said. It wasn't alone. But my question to you is, had they taken the center section out, just
right,
fenced it in and put a sign saying, this isn't ours, that would be sufficient in your position to put it under Marshfield and out of this?
It would put it under Marshfield. It would also put it under Pinnett. Because remember, the reasonable
so
observer...
You'd be home free then.
Yes.
So that the city can, in effect, permit this any place as long as it ultimately gets rid of it and gives it to whoever plants the monument.
As long as the transaction is above board and is lawful under state law and meets the requirements of state law, one of which is that the property in question is no longer needed for public use, and that could be a consideration that would prevent them from doing it in many places, but not in this place, in La Crosse.
Why not?
Because it was not needed for public use. We're talking about a 20 by 22 foot piece of property.
Or 20 by 20, depending on which is.
That's true. The legal description says 20 by 22, but I recognize it's some dispute.
But the fact of the matter is, all the city has to do, any city has to do, is just put a sign up saying this isn't ours anymore and we're home free on the First Amendment endorsement of religion problem.
No, that's not all they have to do.
Well,
they have to legitimately sell it in accordance with state law, which
right,
changes from jurisdiction to jurisdiction.
But to say that any portion of a park, you may say, is not necessary for public use because it's just a small portion of the property.
That's correct.
So that they could do it with any piece, any park, any place.
Theoretically speaking, yes.
Now, what was it like before, as far as public use is concerned, before this sale?
This particular portion of the park, mm-hmm, no one could use it because there was a monument there.
And the Eagles maintained it for all those years.
That's correct.
They put flowers around it, things like that.
The Eagles watered the grass, they mowed the grass, they put flowers around it, they illuminated it from a spotlight.
Before the Eagles put it up there, what was it?
Grass.
Park.
Grass.
Had the same use that all the rest of the park had.
Yes.
Grass.
Yes.
It's actually not a park, is it?
Well, Cameron Park, which
is... It's not part of the park. There's something in there that's not a zoned or... What's the actual situation with regard to the city? Is it a park department maintain and so forth?
Maintains the rest of the park,
right.
The part that still is city property, not the Eagles portion, which is now behind two fences and six signs. It's important to point out, I think, that under Justice O'Connor's concurrence in Panette, as well as other Establishment Clause cases, one of the attributes that we attribute to the reasonable observer is the ability to read. There are six signs that say, this is not city property. What more can a city do? And particularly,
it's not attention to that man behind the curtain.
No, that was a sham. The Wizard of Oz was a sham. This transaction was legitimate. Probably every church in the city of Chicago, if not the city of La Crosse, is built on property that was purchased from a government body. What are we to say? That all of those churches violate the Establishment Clause because people know that, well, that used to be Chicago property or that used to be La Crosse property. This principle knows no bounds and is not justified by any fair reading of Establishment Clause jurisprudence. Another thing that I'd like to focus on in this case in my brief time is the remedy phase of this case never existed. We know that in Marshfield what happened was there was a finding of a continuing Establishment Clause violation and this court sent it back for the district court to come up with a remedy. Same thing in Elkhart. In Elkhart, this court found that the city of Elkhart violated the Establishment Clause by displaying this same monument. It did not order removal of the monument from in front of the city hall in Elkhart. It did not do what the plaintiffs would want the city of La Crosse to do. It sent it back saying to the district court judge that the city of Elkhart retains the ability to dispose of this monument in any way that doesn't offend the Constitution and has an obligation, not an option, but an obligation to take into account in doing so the religious sensibilities of the people of Elkhart. La Crosse isn't even asking for that. They're not asking for anybody to take into account religious sensibilities, but just historic sensibilities. This is an important local landmark. It does commemorate an important local event, the 1965 flood. That's for the evidence in the record. The evidence in the record is of a newspaper article from 1965 from the dedication of the monument. It talks about nothing but the flood and the youth who fought the flood. And yes, there is a connection with the Ten Commandments Monument Program of the Eagles because that had to do with a youth guidance project that the organization was involved in the 50s and 60s. Bring those two things together, the Eagles Youth Guidance Project, the youth who heroically fought the flood in La Crosse in 1965, and there you have a reason to commemorate their efforts with this monument. And that is the perception of the average person in La Crosse ever since. That's what they thought of when they saw this monument. That even when this became a dispute in 2001 or 2002, the minutes of the Park Commission that are in the record, one of the people who came to the commission said, this is a monument to me. I was one of the kids who fought the flood back in 1965. He didn't say keep it because the Ten Commandments are important and we want people to obey the Ten Commandments. He said keep it in some way, however you can, legally, because it's a commemoration of me and my friends who fought the flood in 1965. The district court passed over all of that, ignored Elkhart, ignored Marshfield, decreed, I find that the sale itself violates the Establishment Clause and therefore get it out of the park. It's our position that not only must the district court be reversed, but this court should enter a summary judgment for the Eagles. There are no disputed issues of fact on the validity of the sale. So unless this court is prepared to depart from Marshfield and Elkhart, summary judgment should be ordered entered for the Eagles and the city of La Crosse. Thank you.
Mr. Peterson?
Good morning, Your Honors. May it please the court, my name is Jim Peterson. With my colleague James Friedman, we represent the plaintiff's appellees in this matter. Your Honor, this case decision in Freedom From Religion Foundation versus the city of La Crosse does not provide the quick fix that Mr. Mannion would have it. This court made very clear that the court has the obligation not just to rubber stamp a purported sale of the property, but to evaluate both the form and substance of the sale to ensure that that sale itself did not violate the Constitution. Judge Crabb evaluated that the sale itself in this case not only found material distinctions between the circumstances in La Crosse, but found other circumstances not considered by the Marshfield Court, and concluded that, in fact, the sale itself violated the Constitution. And as a result, to skip to the end of the argument, the remedy is entirely appropriate if, unlike in Marshfield, where the problem was the enduring perception of religion, if the problem is that the sale itself is a violation, the appropriate remedy would be to unwind the sale.
Well, let's talk about...
Well, but she did that initially without even having the city involved in the lawsuit.
No, the city was involved in the lawsuit from the very beginning. The Eagles
were not
intervened
involved.
Later.
The Eagles were not.
We opposed that intervention because we believed it was untimely. They sat on the sidelines until the case was resolved, knowing full well what was going on, but they're in now, and now everyone's fully bound. There's no argument.
What was their finding with regard to legality under Wisconsin state law?
Judge Crabb did not decide the issue of the legality of the sale under Wisconsin state law because she said it wasn't dispositive of the case because the constitutional issue decided that.
And where did she come up with that idea?
Well, she came up with that idea because she looked to the undisputed facts concerning the circumstances surrounding the sale, and although she didn't reach a decision on the legality of the sale, she found that the city had exerted almost no effort in determining what the fair market value was, or almost no effort determining whether the land
almost
was needed
no
for
effort means they did have some effort to determine it, right?
I think the record is very clear. What the city did is it declared that the land was not needed for park purposes, and it declared through an affidavit of the city assessor that the fair market value was $6 a square foot. The record has the evidence that we submitted that had the memo from the city assessor to the city attorney, including the properties that the city assessor looked at to evaluate the fair market value of the land. And under Wisconsin law, fair market value is determined according to the assessor's manual and statute. The best indicator of fair market value is sales of comparable property. There were three sales attached. One was a parking lot, the only plausibly comparable property, undeveloped land. That sold for $19 a square foot, not $6 a square foot. We put that in our facts. The city did not even respond to our proposed response to their proposed findings of fact on fair market value. Anything is undisputed. It's that the city did not do what it was supposed to do in determining fair market value. Same thing with the determination whether parkland was needed. The city council declared that the parkland was not needed, but that was in the face of its own park and recreation plan that established that there was a shortage of a particular category of park in La Crosse, neighborhood parks. Cameron Park is a neighborhood park. The city itself had declared that there was a shortage of land. Now, I suppose there's an argument that can be made that you could take any 20 by 20 parcel and say that's not needed, but that simply eviscerates the statutory law of Wisconsin that says you can sell parkland if it's not needed.
But Judge Crabb didn't look to the statutory aspect of
it. Judge Crabb reached the conclusion that it was not necessary because the cavalier attitude toward the formality of the sale, as demonstrated in the undisputed record by the city of La Crosse, was enough to indicate to her that the city had endorsed religion by the very sale itself. There are other reasons, too, as to why. In fact, there are four basic reasons why this sale demonstrates that the sale itself was an endorsement of religion. One is the city's cavalier attitude and failing to follow the statutory formalities. The first reason is the city's about purpose.
I mean, if you want to get back to that, there's no finding that they failed to follow it, is there?
That would be a conclusion of law. I think the undisputed record concerns is established that they didn't determine the fair market value, and they didn't determine that it was that the parkland was needed.
Well, the dispute is the way they determined it. I mean, through the assessor and coming up with this six something dollars a square foot. That I guess if you get a parking lot, obviously you can only park one car there, so it's not going to. I don't think anybody's going to buy that. If you're going to sell the whole, what size is this, an acre and a half or something?
The whole park is about an acre and a half, yeah.
Yeah, so if that's enough for a parking lot. But I guess the question is also that not just the highest and best use or whatever the market will bear, but also something that is, I guess, compatible with the neighborhood and other zoning things. And this has been there a long time. It has a historic presence. It's not imposing on the park as it had already existed, maybe because of the establishment clause it was an imposition, but not as far as a physical imposition. So it would seem that following Marshfield, they did come up with a remedy, or at least something that allowed it to stay there in its context.
Well, it did indeed. In fact, the city indicated that its avowed purpose was to maintain the monument in the park. And Resolution 92 speaks very plainly to what the city's purpose is. Resolution 92, for the record, is in Record Document
29. That's the affidavit of James Friedman. Resolution 92 is Exhibit N, and it says very plainly that in light of this lawsuit, this gift located in Cameron Park across from the Eagles Club deserves to remain in its present location by any and all means available to the city. It said that we want to hear this. There can hardly be a more clear endorsement of the contents of the monument.
Let's just say, let's stand back and look at this, and they look at this as something that the young people, when saving this flood, and whatever they did, they try to say that is a legitimate marker, and that a lot of people in this town appreciate it for that reason. However, because it also has certain content on its face, the city has to disassociate itself from that. But otherwise, for as far as the community is concerned, there is really a very valid purpose for the city wanting to keep it there. Now, it seems to me this was a rather practical effort here to put up the signs, foul Marshfield, two fences, disclaimers, and everything else, so that the city gets away from its implied endorsement, and yet the Eagles and the other members of the community still have this monument that they've taken care of for 40 years, and other people consider it as part of their history.
That certainly is the city and the Eagles' position, that this was a response to respect this gift that was a commemoration of the flood-fighting efforts. But again, if we look, and again, there's some controversy about the pre-sale display, but the court has to evaluate whether that stated purpose is in fact a sham. In this case, it is a sham. The Eagles offered the monument in 1964, the city accepted the monument in the fall of 64, and the flood occurred in the spring of 1965. And for 30 years, that monument sat there with not one word about any flood-fighting youth. And although certain members of the community may have felt in some way that it was a commemoration of their efforts, it was in fact mentioned by one speaker at the dedication ceremony. The past president of the Eagles said that the monument was dedicated especially to the youth who fought the flood. Certainly is not the case that that's all that the newspaper article contains. In fact, the president of the park board spoke at that meeting and said instead, didn't make reference to the flood-fighting youth, but the president of the park board instead said, "The faithful adherence by all the people of the nation to the messages and admonitions so beautifully inscribed upon it, the monument, will do far more to bring world peace and love of brothers than any other forces in the world today." There was no reference by the city of its purpose to commemorate the flood. That purpose is really a sham. It wasn't the reason the gift was given, and it sat there for 30 years without one word about the flood-fighting youth.
Well, is it a sham to, I guess we'll use the word, magnify what was certainly one of the reasons, and to try to separate that reason, that we'll call it the secular reason, so that the city can, let's say, divorce itself from this implied endorsement. It just seems that scraping the place, if that's the only solution, to just get it out of there, as opposed to trying to preserve one aspect of it while protecting the city from violation of the Establishment Clause. Isn't there a way to do that?
There is a way, and it's extremely practical. Bear in mind that this Resolution 92 that says this monument deserves to remain in the park by any and all means necessary was at a time when not only the plaintiffs, but the Eagles themselves had offered to take the monument back and display it publicly. A city church had also offered to take the monument back and display it publicly. There's nothing in that resolution that says we really need something to commemorate the flood-fighting youth. The second response is that this court has said in books that when an inherently religious display, like the Ten Commandments monument at issue in this case, is displayed on public property, the government displaying that has the burden to offer a legitimate secular purpose for that. The only purpose that has ever been offered for that Ten Commandments monument has been to commemorate the flood-fighting youth. That purpose was never inscribed on the monument for 30-some years, and it was a sham at the outset.
Moreover, I'd like to point out that in this court's jurisprudence, there is, I would say, a measure of suspicion that's brought to purposes for religious displays when the purpose doesn't explain the content. For example, it's like the court considered in Gonzales a suggestion that sculpture was there to beautify a park. Well, that doesn't explain the need for something, but it doesn't explain the need for an inherently religious monument. The need to commemorate the flood-fighting youth might speak to the need for some sort of commemoration or some sort of marker, but it doesn't explain why a particularly and inherently religious symbol would be used to commemorate the flood-fighting youth. There's no connection between the actions of the youth and the marker. And in fact, although some members of the City of La Crosse might think it's an appropriate marker, one of the people who fought the flood is one of our plaintiffs, and one of our plaintiffs said he was offended at the suggestion that that would be the marker that commemorated his efforts 30, 40 years ago.
He only discovered it just now, then, that was even one of the claims.
That's right.
Back when they dedicated it, and this other speaker said that he wasn't, it didn't offend him then.
40 years ago, it was a remark at a dedication ceremony. Now it has been offered as the reason why this monument should be retained in the park. So yes, our plaintiffs didn't hear about it until this litigation. There's nothing in the record that suggests any connection between the monument and the flood until this litigation began.
Suppose that the city had been far-seeing in jurisprudence, and when they were offered that monument by the Eagles, they said, well, we can't put it on the park property, but we'll sell you this 22-by-20-foot place, and you can put it there.
We'd have the same situation we have here. I don't see why it would be any different than as it is now. We'd have to ask whether that sale would demonstrate the city's endorsement of religion. In this case, it did. In that case, again, we'd ask the same questions about the legitimacy of the sale. Is this land not needed for park purposes? And I think that this court is suspicious of taking park property, keeping it ostensibly park property, and requiring then the private, so-called private owner then to maintain it as a park. So we'd ask the same questions about whether the sale was appropriate under state law, and whether the ultimate owner would then have a superior purchase on the whole of Cameron Park the way the Fraternal Order of Eagles does now.
Suppose, in following Judge Keeney's question, that 4 years ago they did that. They did sell the parcel, and nobody challenged it, and then it sat there for this length of time. Would there still be a legitimate challenge if the Eagles had owned it for 40 years and had maintained it as they have? Would there still be a legitimate challenge because it's bordered on three sides by the park and used to be the park 40 years ago?
Your Honor, it would still be the same. The mere passage of time without objection doesn't establish that.
Okay, well, I just want to make sure, because 40 years ago, probably nobody would have bothered with this.
Well, apparently, no one did bother it, and also, under current law 40 years ago, it wouldn't have been the same.
The Constitution has changed a lot in 40 years, I guess, hasn't it?
No, I think our understanding of the Constitution has evolved, and with this Court's guidance.
It wasn't challenged. The Constitution doesn't get involved until somebody challenges an action.
That's exactly right.
Do you see any way a city can legitimately, under these circumstances, divorce itself from any endorsement of religion?
Well, under these circumstances, it would have been easy. The opportunity was there from the beginning. They could have avoided the suit. They could have given the monument back to the...
By a sale, proper.
This Court's decision in Marshfield makes clear that, I believe the words are, adherence to a formalistic standard invites manipulation. And to simply say that passing title of the property and putting up some fences eliminates the endorsement, I think, is exactly that kind of formalistic standard and exactly the kind of manipulation that this Court meant to prohibit in Marshfield. Under the circumstances here in Cameron Park, where you have a tiny park in the heart of the city, bounded on all sides by commercial property, there is no way for that monument to stay in the park without expressing some endorsement of religion. No matter what the signs say, and no matter who holds the legal title to that tiny sliver of land under the monument, a reasonable observer with any measure of familiarity with the dispute is going to recognize that that monument stays in Cameron Park, which was the stated purpose of the city, stays in Cameron Park only with the approval and endorsement of the city.
But the sign, if you can read, the signs explicitly dismiss that idea.
Well, I think the district court put it very succinctly in terms that are really not very controversial, and that is that sometimes actions speak louder than words. Governments are fully capable of irony and duplicity just as much as anybody else, and this court has to recognize that sometimes when dealing in the realm of symbolic communication, you have to look beneath the express message for the understood and plainly stated message.
Well, that cuts both ways. For symbolic communication, I mean, you've taken what was freestanding and now delineated it with fences, with signs, and so forth.
I think we have to take the bitter with the sweet, and that it would be simpler to have a plain stated standard, but that would permit too much and prohibit too much of the good. And so this court has wisely said, and the Supreme Court has wisely said, that government actions must be evaluated in the fullness of their context. And so when we look at this, we don't look just simply to who holds title to that sale or to the land underneath. We actually look to the substance of the sale and the form of the sale, and we look at what the city said and what the purpose is offered for the action, whether they followed the formality.
Well, part of the problem is, since Stone v. Graham, the Supreme Court hasn't said anything. So why down on the, say, just for example, at the in O'Bannon, we say we can't put up this monument, yet down in Austin, Texas, it's plopped right in front of the State House. And for, I think, 9 of the 11 circuits, it's okay to put up the Ten Commandments on public property at various places. Supreme Court hasn't decided, and we have this dilemma. So at this juncture, at least, there seems to be trying to make distinctions from one place to another. Obviously, with Elkhart, the thing's sitting right there. You darn near have to trip over it to get into City Hall. And that was one of the problems. You can't sell it. You can't do something. So they had to find another remedy. I think eventually they just took it out of there. But it does, and in O'Bannon, they tried to come up with something that had 3 historical or 4 combined on it so that it kind of diluted it and looked at a historical thing, but we or they or others have said you can't do that. And so we have a problem nationally. And I realize that each one has to be fought on each little battlefield, I guess, until eventually the Supreme Court decides one way or the other.
Well, if I may make a comment about that.
Yeah, I talked too long. You go ahead.
Justice O'Connor, I think, offers a useful clarification in the recent case, Elk Grove School District versus Newdow, when she reiterates the distinction she's drawn before, and that is that it's appropriate sometimes to display the Ten Commandments in a school setting where it's studied, or in a display that deals with, that commemorates the traditions of lawgiving of our nation, but government crosses the line when it offers the Ten Commandments as a contemplative text and offers that text with the intent that people consider it and apply it and live their lives by it. And in this case, we don't have any real attempt to do anything other than to propose the Ten Commandments as words to live by for the citizens of La Crosse.
With Justice O'Connor's situation, can't they separate themselves from it, literally and legally, without this never erasable endorsement, I guess?
My time has expired, but
go ahead.
I'd like to respond. They can separate it, but they can't separate it by the expedient of a sale of a tiny, insignificant parcel. They can separate themselves by giving it back to its owner, providing for the private display of this religion.
In other words, getting it out of there.
Take it out of the monument, out of the park.
As you pointed out, there are symbolic methods, and severing it by sale is a symbolic method of getting rid of it.
It is a symbolic method, but it's not one that's effective in the entire
complex of the history and of the circumstances in the display. The Marshfield Park, although not out in the country, is in a less urban setting. The park is not so circumscribed by the urban environment that makes it a centerpiece of the civic life of the community. The rest of the park is huge in Marshfield. Thank you, Your Honor.
Thanks. You each had a little time. Go ahead. Mr. Horan. Yeah, you're up.
Okay. Thank you. Incidentally, just for the record, that Resolution 92, that's not the resolution that the council passed, and that's provided for in our response to emissions. What it says is really that I am supposed to check out free legal advice. I recommend, frankly, that we not take free legal advice. That's all that does. We have 17 council members, and frankly, they each have 17 different opinions. Really, what this case is about, as far as the city is concerned...
It sounds like a court, but go ahead.
Yeah, it is. We had a political decision. The park board, back in 1965, accepted this monument. Not the city council, not the mayor. I think the mayor best summarized the dilemma that we were in. This was, we felt, the middle ground. And I think the council felt strongly, and the mayor, after meeting with the Elks, or the Eagles, excuse me, that, look it, we need to keep this thank you. And if you look at the deed, that's what you need to look at, the document that transfers the land. It doesn't say anything about keeping that monument there. Frankly, we could care less. Or it would be better if they got rid of it. But in any event, that was their expression.
Finish up, you got your red light.
Okay. That was the Eagles' expressed thing, as it were, to thank the youth. The deed says, look, you keep maintain this place as a place to thank those kids. And that's it, period.
Okay, thanks.
All right.
Mr. Mannion?
I want to make clear that this is not a case about a Ten Commandments display on public property. It's not public property anymore. All of the considerations that go into Elkhart, O'Ben, and all the other cases don't apply here. The real limited question here is, did this court mean what it said in Marshfield, that this sale of land is an effective way for a governing body to terminate its unlawful endorsement of religion? There were other options available to the city of La Crosse. Yes, they could have removed it. Another option, they could have fought it all the way to the Supreme Court, as I'm sure many people in La Crosse wanted them to do. I know I heard from a lot of them. They chose a legal ground, a legal course of action that was not pleasing to either extreme. The plaintiffs would prefer that the monument be removed. Certain people on the other side would prefer that the monument stay there unencumbered by fences and signs, and that it be city property, because in their view, cities ought to be allowed to display the Ten Commandments in public parks. This court gave the city a roadmap in the Marshfield case, and to a lesser extent in the Elkhart case. The city followed the roadmap that this court gave it. The fact that the plaintiffs don't like the Seventh Circuit's roadmap is not the city's problem or the Eagles' problem.
The argument I hear, though, is that they didn't follow the roadmap in the sense that the sale was not proper.
The sale was proper, Your Honor. The undisputed evidence in the record is that the city assessor made an evaluation of fair market value. The plaintiffs offered nothing by way of an appraisal of their own to dispute that. They've offered argument of counsel, but counsel is not qualified, as far as I'm concerned, I think as far as the rules of evidence are concerned, to offer that opinion. And under Wisconsin law, the opinion of the city assessor is entitled to a presumption of correctness by law. The same thing with the business of whether it's needed for public purposes. It wasn't simply snapping their fingers and saying, oh, we don't need it anymore. It went through the orderly process by which the city of La Crosse always makes such a determination, and that's detailed in the record.
Okay, thanks.
Thank you.
Thanks to all counsel. The case will be taken under advisement.